Climate change is a pressing global issue, but how will it affect clean technology and the way that we talk about it? We got perspectives from both sides of the Atlantic. Welcome to episode 25 of Sideload. Welcome to Sideload, the technology podcast from Edelman London, where we look at how technologies impact the way we communicate, our relationship with brands and each other, and ultimately society. My name is Mariana Fekina. This episode is number 25, and today we will be looking at how a country's political focus affects clean tech communications, and we have perspectives from the UK and US as countries with different political agendas, as this could affect how clean tech is communicated, the need of it, and the public's perception. So with us today, we have Ellie Best, account director in the Edelman London office, specializing in clean tech and social purpose, as well as Joey Marquardt, senior vice president in the Edelman Silicon Valley office, specializing in clean tech and social innovation. So thank you both for being here.
Thank you for having us.
Happy to be here.
Very good. So first off, I thought it would be very interesting to kind of get the different viewpoints from the US and the UK, as these countries have a little bit of a different political standpoint on climate policies and clean tech. So with that, could each of you maybe elaborate a little bit about what these differences might be?
So, while it hasn't always been the case, in general, the current UK political standpoint on clean tech is very positive, and that's especially the case when it's framed in the context of economic growth. So achieving clean growth while ensuring an affordable energy supply for both businesses and consumers sits at the heart of the UK's current industrial strategy, and that's alongside leadership in future mobility, as well as AI and the data revolution. And this is because the government recognised that clean growth will not only increase productivity, but also things like creating good jobs, boosting earning power for people across the country, helping protect the climate and the environment that ultimately we and future generations depend on. So to this end, the government last year published its clean growth strategy, and that sets out government proposals for decarbonising all sectors of the UK economy. So that's over the next decade, and basically explains how the whole country can benefit from low carbon opportunities while also meeting national and international commitments to tackle climate change. Another thing I wanted to mention was that this year also sees the 10th anniversary of the UK Climate Change Act. And the introduction of that Climate Change Act a decade ago was instrumental in setting the direction of travel, as well as the long-term ambition needed to foster clean growth for the UK. So as part of that, successive governments have been challenged by 5-yearly carbon budgets to meet greater and greater emissions reductions while also growing the UK economy. And as a result, there have been various support mechanisms like the current Contracts for Difference, which were legislated in the UK Energy Act back in 2013, that have provided a framework for clean tech investors, renewable developers and supply chain partners to help build globally competitive clean industries in the UK. And there have been some quite significant bumps in the road along the way, which have dented both industry and consumer trust. And there have been mixed opinions about funding mechanisms available for different technologies as well. But overall, the political picture for UK clean tech is definitely a positive one at present.
Well, that is definitely very good to hear. And obviously, Joey, the political climate, if you will, in the US has changed a little bit. So how would you say the viewpoint is in the US in comparison to the UK?
Sure. I would say that the US fell off track, that the UK is still very much on track with some really important goals that the United States was also on track with just 3 years ago. We were very aggressively funding and scaling clean tech in the United States, partially at a government level. We had, you know, President Obama's very large stimulus program when he first took office, which essentially, you know, funded many early stage clean tech ventures as well as adoption of clean technologies by federal agencies and research and development by federal agencies. And a few years into his presidency, the Environmental Protection Agency, the EPA, they also began to make some very important moves in terms of regulating automobile mileage and auto efficiency and trying to get the rest of the country up to the scale of auto efficiency that the state of California and Massachusetts and some of our Northeast progressive states had been at. Meanwhile, the EPA was also taking an important look at utility emissions and had developed a clean power plan, the CPP, which would have drastically reduced carbon emissions from power generation sources. And an important thing to know about the CPP, and apologies for the history lesson, I think it's important to kind of look back before I tell you where we're at today, which is a little bleaker. The CPP really was actually like going where the market was going anyway. Utilities were already cutting their emissions thanks to transitions to natural gas and renewable energy, and so as well as energy efficiency. So the Clean Power Plan, yes, it did require that utilities cut their emissions significantly, but it also was tracking with where the market was moving. Now, that's you know, all of the great stuff that was going on. I didn't even mention some of the nice, you know, public lands protection acts or water protection acts that were also, you know, promulgated during that time. But needless to say, when President Trump was elected, part of his, what he perceives as his mantle for, you know, his presidency is rolling back almost everything that President Obama did. And, you know, sometimes it's because he actually disagrees with it, and other times, you know, his own aides and analysts say it's simply a matter of principle because Obama had done it and he wants to undo it. So what we see here is the Clean Power Plan is completely on hold. It's stuck in our court system. The Supreme Court may be hearing the case. So utilities do not have to adhere to the Clean Power Plan that was developed. So there's that. There's been, you know, some water regulations that have been rolled back so that it's easier for certain chemical facilities to not necessarily have to comply with the strict water rules. A lot of our public lands have been scaled back. And then there's the auto efficiency thing. So this is currently playing out now in a very public way where the president's administration has said that the 54 miles per gallon auto efficiency regulations that Obama's EPA had been proposing are far too stringent, are going to hurt the automobile industry, but also going to hurt the American consumer by making cars more expensive. A lot of research has shown that that's not necessarily the case, but it is the argument they're going with. And so not only is the EPA rolling back its rules on that, but it also is challenging California's right to assert its own auto efficiency standards. California has always enjoyed the privilege of setting its own automobile efficiency standards, which, you know, are quite progressive, and many other states follow their lead. And at the moment, you know, the administration is challenging California's ability to do that. And if that succeeds, then you've got a situation where where, you know, things like not just efficient cars, but electric vehicles look perhaps less attractive for automobile manufacturers to make and for consumers to buy. So we're at this moment where we're hearing a lot more about beautiful clean coal and nuclear power from the presidency. And when they do talk about clean tech, to be fair, and this is the last thing I'll say before before letting you go back, when they do talk about clean tech, they talk about funding very early stage research. And that has not disappeared. And you know, I'm glad to say that, at least, that, you know, our national labs that do very early stage R&D funding still have funding to do clean tech research. And that is exactly where the administration thinks that public funding should go.
Well, definitely thank you for the background. I think that's really interesting, and especially the point about the early stage research, that that's still going on. So that's, you know, definitely a good sign. And kind of with the changes that's happened in the last 3 years, do you think that the need and the type of clean tech communications for your clients have changed, and if so, what challenges has come with this?
Yes, the need for the type of communications our clean tech clients require and should do has changed. Mm. The way that that's changed is, so the common struggle for these companies in communicating their value and engaging with the public, you know, from the Obama administration to now, has been communicating the ability of these companies to scale and commercialize their technologies, and that's not changed. Mm. What has changed, though, is this perception by investors, as well as potential customers and politicians, that these technologies might not have as much of a home in the United States as they did before. And so I'm thinking of solar right now, where we have enacted solar tariffs, which, you know, in the United States is certainly not the only one to do that, but we have some solar tariffs that are making it more expensive for solar installers and solar developers here to install and build, you know, solar installations. And with that, it drives up the cost of solar a little bit, not significantly, but it does drive it up exactly at a time where we're trying to show the cost parity of solar and the ROI on solar. And so those tariffs throw a little bit of a wrench into any company trying to communicate around solar in the United States, because if you're going with a U.S.-only message, you have to explain how your business model and the way you're going to grow is going to succeed with or without tariffs. Now, for other companies that might have a global presence and you know, U.S. companies that might be doing business in other parts of the world, they have it a little bit better with their story and their communications efforts, because they can pivot a little bit and talk about the global markets more, you know, the solar that they're doing in India, in Africa, etc., and really show the world that their story is not limited to the U.S. alone at a time where, you know, the U.S. market is less certain than it used to be. So I think that that's one way that, like, communications challenges have changed in this world. And I think the other thing that is changing is this idea that you might need to pick a side. Mm. And this is especially true for big corporates, Amazon or Google or Facebook or Twitter or Walmart, Target. These brands that are deploying renewable energy in massive scales, are increasingly needing or feeling they need to pick a side in to show their own customers that they won't be slowed down by any sort of public perceptions brought on by the Trump administration that, you know, renewables are a waste of money or things like that. And so that's something that's new today and a new communications challenge is how do you take a brand and pick a side? You know, we are for renewable energy. We are for, dealing with climate change. I mean, these things didn't used to be controversial, but now they've taken on an air of controversy because of the tribalism that we see here, where to just say those things immediately pits one camp against you that does not believe in climate change. And we can talk more about that. I know you have a question about climate change later. So,
yeah,
I think those are some of the challenges.
Yeah, that's definitely very interesting as well, and how it puts a strain on companies to, I guess, signal to their consumers or customers as well. And bringing it back to the UK, to you, Ellie, how do you think the UK climate for clean tech comms has evolved?
So I think it's important to start by referencing the kind of massive technological advances that we've seen in clean tech over the last few years. And I think the offshore wind sector in particular is a great example to pick out here of how just how quickly an industry can evolve, and with it, the comms environment for that technology can evolve too. So just in terms of background, as a nation, we now boast the largest installed offshore wind base in the world. And excitingly, the technology is already price competitive with conventional forms of energy generation, but without the harmful emissions. And last year alone, Britain accounted for more than half of the new offshore wind power capacity built in Europe, which made up something like 53% of the entire capacity installed across the continent, which is obviously massive. And when the economics of technology changed that dramatically, clean tech stops being a nice to have and becomes a much more obvious good news story about innovation, cost reduction, and fostering new ways of thinking to drive progress more generally. I think that said, the challenge of kind of snappily relating what can often be very business to business and sometimes niche clean tech stories to the consumer agenda that then in turn often drives editorial agendas remains. There's also the added challenge when it comes to clean tech that energy is obviously invisible. So a lot of what we focus on in terms of messaging is about dramatizing the benefits of what energy actually enables. And in that sense, I think it's also important to think about communications in the context of the global growing recognition that universal actions required. So from COP21 and the signing of the Paris Agreement to the UN Sustainable Development Goals, a bar's been set for companies to rise to, and exactly to Joey's point, accordingly we're seeing that clean tech's increasingly becoming a marker of a business's wider social purpose. So when I say that, I basically mean that the businesses working with clean tech companies get a reflected reputational benefit, whether that's because they've signed a power purchase agreement with a solar developer to source 100% green energy, in the same way that lots of companies with big energy footprints, like large data centers, have done, in order to make their energy supplies totally carbon neutral, or because they're working with an innovator who's developed, say, a new way to recycle previously unrecyclable materials. But essentially, there's growing global consensus that action is required, and there are massive stakeholder expectations of businesses to take this action. And added to that, the crucial kicker is that this drives commercial value too. So that's definitely something really interesting that we're seeing at the moment.
Yeah, absolutely. It seems like for both in the US and the UK, there are increasing stakeholder expectations. So that's all good signals, I'd say.
Yeah, there was a recent Harvard Business Review study that showed that 58% of purpose-led companies saw significant revenue growth, while 42% of non-purpose companies had flat or declining revenues across the same time period. So, yeah, in terms of kind of commercial rationale, that's definitely there too.
Okay, we are now going to take a quick break to listen back to episode 24, where we spoke with Edelman Global Technology Chair about whether we're falling out of love with Silicon Valley.
Money is not the problem. I think there is a lot of money to be invested, and Silicon Valley is still one of the, you know, the most preferred locations to invest. But the speed of investment is definitely coming down, and that's because of two reasons. One, somehow you get the feeling that the kind of problems that, you know, the companies in Silicon Valley are trying to solve are a bit detached from the real world problems. They're kind of living in a bubble of their own and trying to create niche needs for which they're solving, but not really solving the real issues that, you know, the people in the country or the world are facing. So
have they become a bit detached from reality, do you think?
They have most certainly become detached from reality. So if you look at most of the success stories, we talk about Facebook, we talk about Snapchat, I mean, we're talking about social, right? So yes, there is a certain element of, you know, a need that it fills, and there is utility in it, but it's not really solving a real world problem in any meaningful way.
And welcome back to Sideload. Now, I wanted to look into what impact do you think that the U.S. political climate position has had on clean tech companies specifically, and how they communicate. So maybe if Joey, you could start this one off.
Sure, absolutely. One way that these companies have needed to communicate because of the climate is thinking of at the state level or the local level, and this is for when they're communicating within the United States. So, like, dividing their messages from California to Kansas to Minnesota to New York, right, and making sure that there are even more state-focused than before, because at the state level, there is much less disagreement about the importance of clean tech. At the state level, there is much more support depending upon the state. Mm. And so this, you know, the local politics in the U.S. are not as, I would call it perhaps clean tech averse or clean tech antagonistic, right? Like, they're not quite like that. Yeah. The local politics still resemble normalcy in some ways. It's so localizing the message is certainly one way that clean tech companies are having to, or, you know, wisely choosing to change their stance. I think another thing, without, in the absence of, like, political support for this, mm-hmm. and this is something that Ellie just mentioned, is focusing on the customer experience and why these technologies are irresistible to your life in some way, which is definitely a challenge when you're dealing with something invisible like energy. You know, that is something that several clean tech companies are doing, is focusing even more on what is irresistible about what they offer to their customers or the consumers. And when you pivot that way and focus a bit more on, like, the value you're creating to the customer and the consumer, you're, you know, able for some companies to bridge that gap and go straight to the consumer. You know, what one interesting thing is that, you know, voters skew older in the United States, yeah. and consumers skew younger. And so when you focus more on the consumer experience in whatever way that you can, even if you're a B2B company, mm. You might be helping yourself out, right? Because you are focusing on an audience that is much more receptive to your message. you know, it should be noted that a lot of the folks that, you know, maybe don't understand or appreciate clean tech in the U.S. tend to be of an older voter demographic, and a lot of Trump supporters are an older demographic. And, you know, I know that sort of divide between younger and older voters probably might resonate a little bit in the U.K. as well. And I think that that's, you know, another way that, that companies are changing their stance. I think also that they've had to think about their own funding differently. In the absence of, like, the government believing climate change is a problem, they're certainly not funding mid-stage companies and helping companies commercialize. And so you see a pivot towards commercial investors, you know, strategic partners that can help you scale. So, you know, whether that's, you know, Google helping you scale, or you know, even, you know, Dow Chemical helping you scale, this the corporate investor stance and position has intensified in the absence of government focus. And I think one last thing, looking at the political environment around climate change, you've got this situation where there's active antagonism and tribalism when you even talk about the topic. And when that's the case, companies have to think about what Edelman talks about in his trust barometer. We trust people like me, right? We trust our peers. And if you're dealing with a tribal environment around something like climate change, companies are realizing that they have to think about their own stakeholders in a very focused way to understand how to reach them through and with people like themselves.
Yeah, so just to add to what you just said, Joey, I think, obviously I completely agree with everything you said, and obviously the direct impacts of the US political position are felt less keenly in the UK than the US. But if anything, I think there's just the general point that it's galvanised people behind a mission for change. So it's just that impetus to explain the benefits that are brought to bear by clean tech companies of, like, you know, all scales, whether it's a big business scaling smaller innovations, or whether it's a small startup with a mission for change. It's just that kind of general drive feels like it's very present.
Yeah, definitely, I do agree. And looking at the climate challenges that we are facing today, how do you think that this will affect the public's views and positioning on clean tech, as in before recycling might used to be seen as more of an environmental issue only, whereas now it's positioned as more relevant for everyone? What would be your kind of views on that, Ellie?
Yeah, so I think environmental issues are undoubtedly further up the public agenda now, both in terms of overall awareness and also the demand for action to be taken to address those issues. And I think programs like Blue Planet in particular have played a massive role in bringing previously distant issues like things like plastic waste in our oceans that we as individuals don't see in our day-to-day, but those programs have brought them literally into our living rooms and have a massive role to play in this increased awareness. And I think it's also interesting to mention here, so last year with a client, we undertook the world's largest survey of attitudes into green energy. And the results were really interesting on many fronts, but especially in showing that contrary to the often received wisdom, support for renewables isn't actually just an attitude of the young and liberal. So in the UK, found that 82% of people said that they believed that it was really important to create a world fully powered by green energy, and that was regardless of their age, their education, or their political ideology. And interestingly, leadership in clean tech was also found to be a driver of national pride. And I think this shift in public opinion opens up so many interesting conversations and new routes when it comes to communicating about clean and innovative technology.
Yeah, that's definitely very impressive and very interesting how that is in regardless or in regards to age as well as gender.
Yeah. So age, gender, education, and political ideology. And I think it's just the assumption that clean tech and social innovation more generally mm-hmm. are a partisan issue. And I think what that showed is that actually that's far less the case than we might think.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, 82% is definitely an impressive number for sure. And what about you, Joy?
So, I'm thinking of a survey before I totally answer the question that, in some ways is heartening, in some ways isn't. There was a survey in the United States that looked at climate deniers. I think it was conducted by Columbia University, mm-hmm. and it shows that 12% of the U.S. population were active climate change deniers, which struck me as an unacceptably large number. It's not just folks that maybe don't think it's important. There's a very large percentage of that, but these are people that actually say it doesn't exist. So 12% to me just seems like a disheartening number when we're thinking about the climate change challenges we're facing today. That same survey said that 31% of U.S. respondents never discussed climate change. Obviously, these people must not be living in areas with rising waters or extreme drought, right? Like, they must have a very privileged existence to never discuss it. But nonetheless, these stats kind of struck me as, wow, like, we're being faced with the very real consequences of climate change. Our wildfire season in 2018 was disastrous and is continuing to destroy communities, especially in the American West. Our drought conditions have been pretty awful for farmers in many parts of the countries. And, look at what happened in Puerto Rico with, 6,000 people being without power for so long. It took, that's a separate issue of how long it took us to get them power back. But, yeah. I mean, the storm surge and the increasing, fierceness of storms is certainly, you would think, enough for people to really want to face this challenge. And I guess if you flip that number, that does mean, if 12% think that, they're denying climate change, I guess that leaves a good 88% who are not denying it. And that's something we can work with. And not to be all doom and gloom, there's a lot of parts of this country that people are doing very important things. And in California, by 2045, that state is going to be 100% carbon neutral.
Yeah, that's amazing.
So that's fantastic. But back to your question, though, how do you think it'll affect public views positioning on clean tech? I think they'll increasingly think about how climate change is impacting their risk in life, and the fact that, like, climate change might hurt their business or their home. And so they'll think about, things like risk and insurance and resilience and adaptation.
Yeah.
And as they think through those things, I think they'll see the technologies that are helping defray those risks as less fringe, right, and more a part of survival.
Yeah, absolutely. It's definitely keeps changing and with what those risks are and what they need to maybe do a little bit differently. And what direction do you see, the future of clean tech go in each of your regions? And are there any main challenges specifically that you see coming?
So I think at the kind of very highest level, I think we will see much more in terms of new developments in transport and heat in particular coming down the line in the next few decades. And I think advances in batteries and fuel cells will be an important component of this, but also considering the kind of wider infrastructure that will be required and just the kind of basic fact that the investment needed in order to properly decarbonise heat and transport will be enormous. But then again, when you reflect on the scale of what's been achieved in the last 10 years, I think it's very exciting really to think about what might be achieved in the next 10. And that particularly when you then put that back in context of exactly what we were talking about in the previous question about kind of rising public awareness of these issues. And obviously there are still the kind of awareness action barriers or divides that need to be bridged. But overall, I think it's very exciting.
It is very exciting, I agree. And in the US?
I totally agree about transportation. I think that transportation is a very exciting vehicle, if you will, for the growth of clean tech. You know, the nice thing about this question is I get to think about the future beyond, you know, who's in the White House right now. And that future is still trending in the right direction. I think that electric vehicles, even hydrogen cars, other advanced mobility options, whether that's e-bikes or electric scooters or, you know, the ride sharing, like all of these things, I think are only going to accelerate as each year goes on. And I think that, you know, this generation of people that are coming up into the age where they can have driver's licenses, more and more of those folks are choosing either to not get licenses or to just drive in a different way than their parents did. And I think that, you know, the future for transportation is really exciting, and I think a lot of innovation is going to happen around it, whether that is the battery, like Ellie said, of course the cars themselves, but also the systems, the connected car systems that, you know, essentially digitalize the car and connect it to the home or buildings or cities. Cities is another area that I see the future of clean tech going. I think that, you know, the smart city movement is a really powerful one for clean tech, and more and more cities want to be perceived as smart and to digitalize their operations or even just have smarter processes for their cities to be leaner and more efficient. And I think the opening for clean technologies, whether that is, you know, smart grid technologies or you know, building controls, smart traffic controls, or even like smart materials for the buildings and roads themselves, like all of that, and renewable energy too, right? Like whether that's panels on houses or community solar, you know, just outside of the neighborhood, I think that there's a lot of exciting things opened up by the smart city trend. And lastly, I think that we're going to see a lot more in water. I think that water is a bit of a sleeper issue, and a lot of clean tech companies working in water are dealing with a very fragmented market, and not all corporates have come alive to like the amazing things they can do with reusing wastewater. So I think that, you know, we've seen a lot on renewable energy and transportation in our clean tech narrative thus far. I think that we will see more in water, particularly in my region, which is so drought stricken. So those are some of the changes I see coming. And, you know, the challenges like that are very similar to the challenges we've already discussed in this podcast. You know, as these changes happen, you have to communicate how you're scaling and funding. You have to deal with a tribal audience. You have to, one thing we haven't talked about is activate non-governmental third parties and big corporates to be on your side. You know, having those people that will vouch for you is going to become even more important as we try to bring more of these technologies to scale.
Throughout the podcast, we've definitely covered a lot of great signals. There seem to be a lot of demand for action, as well as demand from stakeholders and consumers as well for companies to take action in regards to the climate challenges that we are facing, regardless of the political climate. So that's definitely, you know, a good point to be in moving forward. So thanks again to both of you and to you, Joey, for dialing in from the US, and for everyone who was tuning in. And if you want to get in touch, please do email siloed@edelman.com.